Jeff's going to share a little bit about the greatness that we hope for all our alumni, especially. So please give a warm welcome for the president of Catholic Christian Outreach, Jeff Locker.
Applause.
To speak, it's a little bit easier for me to present or share with you guys. So you have in front of you a note-taking guide, or it also, I think, was forwarded to you electronically, where to take notes electronically. So it gives you an opportunity, or just use, you can put in your, you don't have to do it on that. If you prefer to take notes or things that strike you, put in your journal, that's your way. I just wanted to provide something, because I find that, to engage learning usually involves more than one sense. More than just hearing, it's typing, or it's writing, or it's something. And that's what my hope is, that we can come together and learn together. This presentation, as we talk about You're Made for Greatness, a practical and spiritual reflection on the virtue of magnanimity, and we'll get into that. But ultimately, I want to begin here by sharing with you three true stories. Three true stories. First of all, does anyone know who this is? Any guesses? Not Dan Freeman, no. Anyone? Okay, no guesses. Well, this is Eric Little. Anyone heard of Eric Little before? No one's ever heard. Well, let me tell you about Eric Little. Eric Little was a competitor in the 1924 Olympic Games in London. And he actually set the Olympic and world record in the 400-meter race. Eric Little was born in China, son of a missionary family, and he went back to England to study at university. And while at university, he discovered, in fact, that he could run very fast. He was a very fast runner. In fact, he was the top athlete in the world in the 100-meter race. And so he was training for the Olympics in 1924 and preparing for the 100-meter race. But when the schedule came out for the Olympics, 8 months in advance, the schedule of events, what day each event would be, he discovered that the 100-meter event was going to be taking place on a Sunday, and that he was a devout Christian and felt it would compromise his morals to compete on a Sunday. And so he withdrew from the race. People were discouraged. A lot of people said, no, don't worry about it. It's just one day. Like, you're the best in the world. Do it. He said, no, I can't, in good conscience, race on Sunday. But instead he said, you know what, I'm going to change my training regime and I'm going to train instead for the 400 meter. The 400 meter took place on another day, not a Sunday. Has any of you ever ran track? Are you guys involved in track at all? Not too many. If you're involved in track, you would know a little bit that the 100 and the 400 meters are very different races. And if you're really good at the 100, you may be sort of average, if not below average, in the 400 meter. Quite different races. But he set his mind to it. And he ended up setting the Olympic and world record in the 400 meters in the 1924 Olympic Games. One of the things he's famous for is this quotation. God made me fast, and when I run, I feel his pleasure. God made me fast, and when I run, I feel his pleasure. So you probably are a little more familiar with this, but have any of you ever heard of the movie Chariots of Fire? Have you seen the movie Chariots of Fire? It's an old, old movie. The Chariots of Fire movie is about the story of Eric Little. So it's one of those classic, guys, if you really want to maybe impress a girl of your sort of cultured expression, you can say, let's watch Chariots of Fire, a classic movie. That's Eric Little. Does anyone know who this is?
Yes. She is...
What's her name?
I have seen this presentation. I forget her name, though. I'm sorry. She's like...
Does anyone who hasn't seen the presentation before remember who this is? The leg up here. No. So this is Emily Martinez. Emily Martinez. You know Emily Martinez?
She was the MC at C.
She was, she was one of the MCs at C.
Yeah, I didn't want to take the shot. Though. I didn't want to take the shot.
So, but do you know Emily's story? You might not know Emily's story. So Emily loved the arts, and she studied acting during her undergraduate degree at the University of Nebraska, Lincoln. While at university, she had a profound encounter with the Lord, and it came through her relationship with some Focus missionaries who were on campus there. But because she loved acting and she longed to see this have an impact, her faith and her arts have an impact in the world, she decided to do something about reaching out to theater students. So she met with one of the focus missionaries, and they started discussing different ideas. And they actually came up with this, you could call it sort of an event or an activity on their campus called CREATE, which stood for Catholics Redefining Art Through Excellence. And every month they hosted an event where they'd have a different speaker come and talk about a different aspect of the arts, dance, music, film, writing. They do a performance where they display their craft, talk about how their talent glorified God. This event drew a lot of different people, and she did this while she was a student. So while she was a student on campus, she had this desire to do this. During her senior year of college, she was planning to go into a master's degree, but she discerned that calling to serve as a missionary, to sort of set aside that graduate studies and to be a missionary with focus. And she abandoned herself to that, and as she let go of it, she thought, okay, well, wherever I go, I'll be placed on a campus, and God has put me here, and I'll probably have to let go of these aspirations for art. Well, it turned out in the end she was placed on a campus that actually had a specific college for fine arts. And, you know, she knew that God gave her the talent in art to reach out to students with this gift as well. So she invited students, and she specifically tried to connect with students in the arts faculty to invite them to be involved in her Bible study. And at the end of the year, they decided to do another event where she and her students together put on a show using their different medium, the different forms of art that each of them specialized in, painting, dance, drama. And they created an event around the scripture passage about the woman at the well. And so each of them, through their medium, shared their artistic expression of it, and also shared their testimonies about how they had come to Christ and how they had grown in their love and relationship. And the event on campus drew tons and tons of people from the art faculty who were interested in hearing about it. Lots and lots of people that would not normally come to a faith-based event. And here's one of the things that she said at the end of that event. She said, "It just made sense to me that we'd be reaching out to people who are artists because they're going to be creating things their whole lives, things that are going to impact a lot of people. And what if Christ was at the center of that?" Finally, does anyone recognize this photo here? Hopefully you all do, or you might not. This is André and Angèle Regnier, founders of CCO, and their daughter Mylène, recently born. Around the time CCO started, Mylène was born just after CCO began. And you all know this, probably all know the story of how CCO began. André and Angèle, two students on campus who met and had dreams of what they could do for the Lord. André's had a conversion and really wanted to reach out to Catholics because he saw so many Catholics falling away from their faith. And was at the prayer meeting as a young person, probably around your age, because of André's story and the way his path, he sort of spent some time away from school because he was working, and then he went back to school and then he did some wrestling. So he was not a typical sort of undergrad 18-year-old. He did his undergrad sort of, you know, in probably about between 20 and 25. And so as they met, they came together, and as they graduated, they felt the Lord inspire them and call them to start CCO. Now, at that time, it was just them. Now, it was only them. I mean, their friends were graduating as well and leaving campus. And so the two of them had this grand vision. And they had a sense, and you probably know that famous story, as André kind of walked onto the campus, and U of S has this entryway that has several doors. And he felt a sense within him from the Lord as he walked up to the panel of doors and opened the center one, saying, "Who's first? You know, who's that first leader, that first young person I'm going to encounter, that I'm going to be able to reach out to, who's going to reach out to others? Who's first? Who's God putting in my heart to be who's first?" So the question I have to suppose we're just going to start is, what do these three stories have in common? You know, there's different things we could talk about. You could talk about, you know, sort of the faith dimensions of them. Certainly that's an aspect there. But if you look a little bit deeper, and the thing I want to share and speak about a little bit more with you today is that these three stories have in common the virtue of magnanimity. the virtue of magnanimity. So when you see this word and hear this word and try to pronounce this word, you probably think, what is magnanimity? What is magnanimity? Well, first of all, it's the most difficult virtue to pronounce. Magnanimity. It's the most difficult virtue to pronounce. But magnanimity comes from the word magnanimous. Magnanimous fundamentally means great soul or greatness of soul in the Latin magna anima. Or another way of looking at it is that the soul tending towards great things, animus magna. So there's sort of a great soulness. Or another way, we talk about this, or you know, kind of in a bit more colloquial language, it's magnanimity is the virtue or the habit of striving for great things. The virtue or the habit of striving for great things. So just a quick bit of background here. We talk about virtue, because virtue is not, you know, as a vocabulary, but sometimes we've lost a little bit of understanding. What is virtue? So first of all, virtue has existed for a long time in conversation. Aristotle was one of the first to speak about it, sort of pre-Christian even, and he described virtue as excellence at being human, a skill that helps a person to survive, thrive, form meaningful relationships, and find happiness. The Catechism, though, also talks about virtue. The Catechism defines it as a virtue is a habitual and firm disposition to the good. It allows the person not only to perform good acts, but to give the very best of himself. The virtuous person tends toward the good with all his sensory and spiritual powers. He pursues the good and chooses it in concrete actions. And ultimately, the goal of the virtuous life is to become like God, St. Gregory. So I'm not expecting you to sort of memorize all of these slides, but I'm trying to give you a bit of a context so as we come to understand this. So this is what virtue is. This philosopher, Joseph Piper, is one of the most, contemporary. He's not living today, but sort of recent philosophers who's one of the experts in Thomistic philosophy, the philosophy of St. Thomas Aquinas. And St. Thomas Aquinas's work is fundamentally sound and based in Aristotle's philosophy and understanding the human person. So Joseph Piper spoke about magnanimity, wrote about magnanimity as such. And just to give us a bit of a, again, to try to fill this out a little bit more, magnanimity, a much-forgotten virtue, is the aspiration of the spirit to great things. Extensio animi as magna. A person is magnanimous if he has the courage to seek what is great and to become worthy of it. Magnanimity, as both Thomas and Aristotle tell us, is the jewel of all the virtues, since it always, and particularly in ethical matters, decides in favor of what is, at any given moment, the greater possibility for the human potential of being. That's a pretty philosophical statement. You know, kind of saying that. But if you wanted to expose you to that, to hear that, you know, as you look at it, it is fundamentally a person is magnanimous. He has the courage to seek what is great and to become worthy of it. And to look at what is the greatest possibility here for human potential. The greatest possibility for human potential. Thomas Aquinas, whom we referred to, described the magnanimity as the stretching forth of the mind to great things. The magnanimous person seeks to do great acts, things which are deserving of honor. And magnanimity strives for what is greatest in proportion to man's own capacity. So I hope you're getting a bit of a sense here of what this virtue is about. Again, if we could summarize it really simply, it is the habit of striving towards great things. The habit of striving towards great things. One of a friend of mine, who is a contemporary, he's a French citizen who worked in Belgium and works in Russia and speaks all over the world, and has been a real advocate for understanding more and more, recovering the understanding of what is magnanimity, Alex Savard. And Alex described in one of his books this way. Magnanimity is an ideal rooted in the trust in man in his inherent greatness. It is the virtue of action. It is a supreme form of human hope. Magnanimity is the virtue capable of setting the tone for one's entire life, transforming it, giving it new meaning, and leading to flourishing of the personality. And it's a first specific virtue of leadership. And he uses a really great diagram here when we talk about magnanimity as the striving towards great things with sort of two parts. There's an aspect of magnanimity that is contemplation. So this is an awareness of our own dignity, an awareness of our strengths and talents, the dreams that we have, you know, sort of this dreaming, contemplating what could be, what are those great things that could be. But it's also a virtue of action, taking action to affirm our personal dignity, the affirmation of our strengths and talents through actions, and missions. Very simply put, again, to summarize this, magnanimity isn't the virtue of sort of daydreamers. It's also not the virtue of activists, people who just get out there and just do things for the sake of doing things and causes. You know, those folks that would basically go to any protest for any reason. Magnanimity is a virtue that combines both a deep contemplation, an awareness, a dreaming of what are my gifts and talents and how can I use them, and a plan to put those into action, a mission that is linked to those gifts and talents that affirm who we are. So Alex would say this as well: leaders are magnanimous in their dreams, their visions, in their sense of mission, in their capacity for hope, in their confidence and daring, in their enthusiasm for the effort to bring their work to a successful conclusion, in the propensity for a means proportionate to their goals, in their capacity to challenge themselves and those around them. So leaders are magnanimous in these areas through this.
Do you mind going back to the chart for a minute?
Yeah.
Give a quick example, Jeff, of affirmation of your personal dignity, in regards to acting there.
Yeah. So, can we hold off because down the road. If you still have a question, then bring it back at the end. Okay. Is that all right? Okay. So then, to kind of summarize this part of when we're looking at it, in the introduction of these three individuals, or these four individuals, these three stories, truth stories. When we spoke about, let's go back here, when we spoke about Eric Little, Emily, and Andre Nochelle, we think about Eric, you know, what were the aspects of his life that exuded or exemplified magnanimity? Well, one was the awareness of his talents and strengths. He knew he was fast. He had a sense of that he had, and he also, at the same time, he had a dream to be a missionary, actually. He wanted to go back to China and to fulfill his parents' dream. And in fact, after he competed in the Olympics and finished, he went back to China. He actually died in China as a missionary. But he didn't say, I want to be a missionary. I've got this talent to run. I should set aside all of my talents and only focus on this one aspect of my desire to be a missionary. He sensed within his own, the gifts that God had given him, that it was important that he cultivate this talent that he had for God's greater glory. That he would cultivate this gift that God had given him, not shun the gift, but cultivate it for God's greater glory. And this whole story of him and him putting aside the 100 meter to run in the 400 meter has communicated God's glory to generations after generations. It was a credible testimony. So the affirmation of his personal dignity and gifts by engaging them, by taking action, actually brought a tremendous amount of glory to God. Secondly, Emily, as you know, she was also aware of her talents, her gifts, and the dreams, the visions she had. And she had the confidence to say, even as a student, you can think about this, an undergrad student saying, I want to do something. I want to start something for artists. I don't just want to be in a Bible study and stay in a Bible study. I want to reach out to other artists. This is where my gifts and passions are. I want to reach out to these other artists. And you can just hear in that sort of statement, there's sort of a great souledness there, right? We talk about magnanimity, that magna animus. There's a habit or a striving for great things. It's within her. She wasn't just thinking about it. She didn't just sort of have a daydream, like, well, wouldn't that be great? She also took action. She moved it forward. She took risks. And finally, of course, Andre and Angel, as we think about the beginnings of the movement again, we sense there is a dream, a vision for what could be, a desire to, and this, to put this sense of dreams within them into action. And even that statement, who's first? There's a certain affirmation of both the vision and the and one's dignity. You know, there's a confidence. It's not just like, I hope someone shows up. You know, it's an expectation. There's an expectancy. Who is first? Expect this to happen. And in part, that's where when we talk about within CCO, when great expectations are have a human root in the virtue of magnanimity, which is, we won't get into it today, which is, but is even further sort of transfigured when it comes to understanding the virtue of hope, theological virtue of hope. So, give you a bit of a sense that I wanted to kind of touch a little bit on and help you to hear and understand this very oft mispronounced word, misunderstood word, and maybe completely unfamiliar word. Like, you know, and it's not surprising me, but before today and sharing this word magnanimity, who had never heard that word ever spoken before? The word magnanimity. Yeah, it's not unexpected. Because it's been a forgotten virtue, as Joseph Piper said, it's an oft-forgotten virtue within our culture. Yet it is one of the most important virtues for a Christian. And this is what we're going to get into next. Any questions on that, sort of the understanding of magnanimity as a definition or as an illustration? Magnanimous dreams. So, Pope Francis and World Youth Day in Krakow gave a speech at the vigil, and it was a very moving speech. I don't know if you read it or you had a chance to read it, but I've paired out a few excerpts that I want to share with you today. First part here. So again, this is in the vigil. You guys will be out there in the vigil. In the field, and Pope Francis will give a speech there as well too. But here's what he said to the youth of the world in Poland on the vigil. Dear young people, we didn't come into this world to vegetate, to take it easy and to make our lives comfortable, a comfortable sofa to fall asleep on. No, we came for another reason, to leave a mark. It is very sad to pass through life without leaving a mark. But when we opt for ease and convenience, for confusing happiness with consumption, then we end up paying a high price indeed. We lose our freedom. My friends, Jesus is the Lord of risk. He is the Lord of the eternal more. He is not the Lord of comfort, security, and ease. Following Jesus demands a good dose of courage, a readiness to trade in the sofa for a pair of walking shoes, and to set out on new uncharted paths, to blaze trails that open up new horizons capable of spreading joy, the joy that is born of God's love and wells up in our hearts with every act of mercy. That is the secret, my dear friends, and all of us are called to share in it. God expects something from you. Have you understood this? God expects something from you. God wants something from you. God hopes in you. God comes to break down all your fences. He comes to open the doors of our lives, our dreams, and our ways of seeing things. God comes to break open everything that keeps you closed in. He is encouraging you to dream. He wants to make you see that with you, the world can be different. For the fact is, unless you offer the best of yourselves, the world will never be different. This is the challenge. Today, Jesus, who is the way, the truth, and the life, is calling you, you, and you to leave your mark on history. He who is life is asking each of you to leave a mark that brings life to your own history and that of many others. He who is the truth is asking you to abandon the paths of rejection, division, and emptiness. Are you up to this? Are you up to this? What answer will you give? And I'd like to see it with your hands and with your feet to the Lord, who is the way, the truth, and the life. Are you up to this? May the Lord bless your dreams. So this speech which he gave to the pilgrims and to the world was an invocation of the virtue of magnanimity. He was calling for young people to dream big dreams, great dreams, and he was calling them to get off the sofa and take great action. This is a magnanimous, a cultivation, a calling forward of magnanimity within all of us. So I want to take a moment, I want to ask you guys to think about, and then we're going to have a little discussion in pairs, these questions. What are your dreams? And I have specifically three. What are your dreams for your personal life? Maybe you have a dream to be married, to have a family. Maybe you have a dream to have a successful career. What are your dreams for your personal life? Secondly, what are your dreams for your community? Some of you, interestingly enough, have communities sort of back home in Canada. Some of you have communities in other places, like your family, where your family comes from originally. You have different parts and different aspects of where you touch community. What are your dreams for your community? And finally, what are your dreams for your nation? Specifically as Canadians, what is the dream, your dreams for Canada? Adopt Canadians included. What are your dreams? Fundamentally, that's the question. So I want you to take a moment, and this can be a bit challenging, but I invite you to be free in your dreaming, as the Pope invited us to. What are your hopes? What are your dreams? What would you love to see? What are your, we could call it even great expectations, but what are your dreams? For yourself, for your community, for your nation, for the world. So take a couple moments and quietly in silence or within your own reflection, just start to write some of that out. Jot down point form, however you find it's helpful for you. And then I'm going to, in a few moments after doing that, I'm going to give you a chance to share it with the partner. And we should speak about this a little bit. I'm going to pause you guys for a minute. Slight, small observational comment. You can hear how much energy there is in the virtue of magnanimity and exercising the virtue of magnanimity and talking about our dreams and thinking about our dreams, expressing our dreams. It's an energizing virtue. Often we don't maybe feel that sad. I would venture to say that some of the things you're talking about, the way you're feeling, well, at first, especially because you're getting into it, there's going to be sort of a little bit of hesitation or just, oh, how do I write? But as you start talking about those things, there's things within you that awaken, I would guess, and sort of jump to life. And that's really important, tapping into what magnanimity is all about. I just want to give a little opportunity for maybe two or three people who might want to share one of those dreams in one of those categories. So I just want to open the floor and invite one of you to share one of those. I know there's lots, but who'd like to go?
I've done this like a lot, so it was quite. This was a really interesting task. What I would like to do, the one that stood out the most to me, dreams for my community, as I really like. Our city to grow, like my city and my country are things I both take a lot of pride in, and I want them to be known and acknowledged and respected by other people the same way that I respect them.
Okay.
I've heard some magnanimous speakers say that if you're not growing, you're shrinking, and it's like you want to be in for that focus on growth, that focus on development, that focus on building things up. Both for the community as a whole, as well as for the religious organizations and the Catholic Church
yes.
in it, within it.
Yeah. Yeah, that's fantastic. One of the interesting parts of that, you know, kind of when we talk about the virtue of magnanimity, is the affirmation of our gifts and talents and part of who we are. So it's interesting that you're an engineer, because engineers build things. So you have a vision and a heart to build, not just structurally, but probably it also includes, you probably are imagining that what a beautiful, well-engineered city would be like, as well as all the cultural elements that you're wrapping into that.
What an engineered Kingston would be like. Because my heart's in Kingston. Cities are cities, but yeah.
Yeah, Kingston's a city, isn't it?
It is, it is.
But that's like, what I was referring to.
Yeah.
So great, thank you. Another one? Another dream?
I wish I was able to do more of this, but like specifically for Canada, since we don't have any abortion laws or like any anti-abortion laws,
yeah,
I would love to see Canada just become more pro-life and family-focused.
Yes.
And you know, we're talking about this during our share, but just to have that opportunity for, you know, this message to be just put forth, because it'll do so much good for our nation.
Yeah, absolutely. The heart of a nation is its people, you know, and so to value its people, to have a heart, a dream, to cultivate a greater value of its own people for future generations is a magnanimous dream. Awesome. So one more. I know I wish we could all take that opportunity, because it's awesome to spend time in this. One more.
I'll say here for personal life. Would be to just live freely, securely, in the Father's love, and to have serenity and joy in wherever you know, God's will leads me. Or state of vocation, work.
Yeah. So I mean, touching on those things about peace and joy in our personal lives, you know, when we, if you remember back to the slide where there was contemplation and action, it talks about sort of the recognition of the inherent dignity and gifts that we have, and then kind of affirming those in our actions. So as we come to understand and know who we are, and to act in those, in the understanding of who we are, our identity, we find those things, we find those joys. So the virtue of magnanimity is actually a very, very closely linked with identity. Very closely linked with identity. So one of the things maybe we can do, I mean, so here's one of the challenges of homeworks going out of this during this week, is we didn't all have a chance. You've got to share with someone else. I want you to, at some point during the mission, ask some other person that you didn't talk to, tell me about your dreams. Tell me what are your dreams? So you can hear, and you can do more than one if you want to. I mean, the minimum of one other person, okay? The second half of this presentation, as we kind of come into that, and this exercise of dreaming is a good one to do. It's a good one to cultivate in your life, to revisit, to come back to. But I wanted to kind of have, there's two other kind of closing sections, and the first one is about magnanimity and mission. So as you've probably heard this quote many times before from Pope Benedict, the world promises you comfort, but you are not made for comfort, you are made for greatness. You are made for greatness. You are made to be magnanimous. Here's from Pope Francis just a few years ago. He said, another trait of a Christian is magnanimity. I could alter that slightly and I say should be magnanimity. He's speaking sort of in a way of speaking to the innate what character that should be recognized, but it is magnanimity. Because he is a child of a magnanimous father, of a great heart. The Christian heart is magnanimous. When you enter into Jesus' friendship, when you let yourself be guided by the Holy Spirit, the heart becomes open and magnanimous. We talk about this principle and we think again about our Christian faith and how does magnanimity connect with mission, especially in the Christian context. We can't not speak about the Magis. The Magis, St. Ignatius of Loyola and the founding of the Jesuits. The motto of the Jesuits is Ad Majorem Dei Gloriam, just for the greater glory of God. What is for the greater glory of God? So not just for the glory of God, but for the greater glory of God. And Ignatius also would often ask and counsel his brothers to say, ask this of yourself. What have I done for God? What am I doing for God? What more can I do for him? There is the habit of striving for more, the habit of striving for great things, for greatness. This is picked up by Pope Francis as well, again recently, a few years ago, when he said, "The Lord works with all those who preach the gospel. This is the magnanimity that Christians should have. A pusillanimous Christian is incomprehensible." Sidebar, asterisk. Pusillanimity is basically the opposite of magnanimity. Pusillanimity is a smallness, a cowering in the corner, kind of a small-heartedness. It's not humility. It's something completely different, which we can talk about at another time. Because humility is not smallness. A pusillanimous Christian is incomprehensible. This magnanimity is part of the Christian vocation. Always more and more. More and more. More and more. Always onwards. This is the heart of mission. This is the heart of the Jesuits, especially, that Ignatius gives to us as a kind of church and sort of so well represents as an icon of this magnanimous virtue in action. So, the question sometimes that people ask me is, how do I cultivate magnanimity in my life? I want to be a magnanimous Christian. I want to be a magnanimous person. And I'll give you a few practical tips, a few practical guidelines, because it's a habit, it's a virtue, and we form virtues by building good habits, by exercising them. So four things. First of all, form magnanimous friendships. So this is easy, you're doing it already in this mission project. Seek the company of magnanimous people and choose magnanimous friends. Because part of the magnanimity is a lot of it is a virtue of the heart. It's not a virtue of the will like temperance is. It's a virtue of the heart. And with the heart, things are caught more than they're taught, in a way, as we would say. So when you think about choosing, you know, your friends, who are those people that you spend time with? Are they and to be intentional about saying, I recognize this person is a great person. You know, and they seem to be someone who's striving for greatness in all that they do, striving for excellence. These are the kind of people you want to be around because they will help you to grow. So seek the company of magnanimous people, meaning even seeking to spend time with maybe people that aren't friends, you know, sort of in your peer group. But it might be even, so for example, at Rise Up, you know, you heard a great speaker. To seek that company might be to go up to him and say, oh, I'd love to sit down and talk with you for 10 minutes after the session. You know, like, be in the company of magnanimous people. Second of all, expand your world. So reading inspiring biographies of magnanimous people, so people who've lived great lives, books by great thinkers, the lives of the saints. Watch inspiring movies of magnanimous people. Here's a little thing I've been doing with our kids and such, and we've been talking about, you know, choosing movies. And sometimes you just want sort of a brain dead movie, and you just want to laugh and all that. But think about your media choices. You know, like if you have an opportunity to watch a movie that's basically just completely junk food for your mind, or to watch a great film, like I was sort of sharing beforehand. My wife and I recently put on Sully, which is a story of the United Airlines captain who landed the plane on the Hudson. And it shows kind of what was going on all throughout that experience before and after. And it's a really inspiring movie. Like, it inspires you to be a great person, because he was a great person. He wasn't just a good airplane pilot. The way he handled it, there was a greatness to it. So watching magnanimous films is another way to be inspired. Encounter beauty. Dream, which we just did, for example. Taking time to dream what could be. Travel, experience new cultures, plan an adventure. It seems like a lot of you guys are doing that after the World Youth Day. You've already organized all the things you're doing afterwards, so you're already on the road to that. So expand your world. Third, serve with your talents. So identify your strengths. Work to improve your strengths, to grow in them and your talents. Don't compare yourselves to anyone. That's a really dangerous thing to do. But what are your strengths? What are your uniquenesses? And how can you...
Life is good.
So develop your strengths. What are those strengths? And if you have a hard time knowing what are your strengths, one of the easiest ways to do it to begin with is to ask a few trusted friends or family members, what do you see as my greatest gifts or my strengths? There are also other things you can do, like we don't say courses, but you know, there's been research done into things like StrengthsFinder and other things that can help you to understand yourself. So what are your strengths? And then work at, improve your strengths, grow in your strengths. So serve with your talents and put those strengths into action. So Chelsea's a great example, maybe, in this area, because she knows she has a gift and she's musically gifted. And she chooses to develop that. She chooses to go, she goes to conferences that help her to develop as a worship leader. She practices. She takes opportunities to offer those talents at Rise Up or for the staff. So you serve with your strengths. What are you strong in and take active service? And fourthly, see and seize opportunities. Don't let opportunity pass. Don't be afraid of failure. Seek greatness in ordinary life. And you guys probably know why I've got the picture of Wayne Gretzky up there. Why is that?
He missed 100% of the shots you never take.
That's right, exactly. He missed 100% of the shots you don't take. Did you guys heard that?
Say it again.
Wayne Gretzky famously said,
I think that was Michael Scott.
Yes. Revisionist history. He famously said, you miss 100% of the shots you don't take. So if you don't even try, you'll absolutely miss. It's worth trying. It's worth risking. It's worth attempting. So, you know, that could be some new endeavor in your parish. That could be starting a Bible study. But it could also be something really big. It could be starting a new NGO. It could be starting a new movement, a new ministry. It could be running for office. There's all kinds of things. Don't let opportunity pass you by. Don't be afraid of it. See and seize those opportunities as they come into your life. One dream, one step. So this is kind of, we're getting to the end. What I want you to do as an action point, the second action point, one was to ask someone about their dreams. But this last action point is to take one of your dreams and to make a concrete resolution. What is going to be your first step? What are you going to do? I don't just want this to be a bunch of, daydreaming. So you have a dreams there. What is one step you could take? One step you could take in one of those dreams. Might not be able to happen on mission here, but it might be that thing that you do when you go back. So just take a moment, write down, what is that action that you can take one step forward in that dream? So I want you to take a turn to your partner again, and I want you to share what is that action? What is that? Oops, book there. So the screen is going crazy, so I'll just put it like this for now for the end here. One dream, one step. So, you were made for greatness at World Youth Day in 2000. This picture here. At the end, we had you'll see here, a little logo, and it's hard to see, but it has a globe on fire. And it basically talks about set the world on fire. That was our theme we chose as a team, set the world on fire. And at the end of World Youth Day in 2000, we were gathered in the field with 2.2 million people in Tor Vergata in Rome. And the Pope, Pope John Paul II, you know, gave his final blessing. And then he quoted St. Catherine of Siena. And this is what he said. If you are who you should be, you will set the world ablaze. So our whole group went crazy because we were just like, we chose that ahead of time. We didn't quote well. It's like Holy Spirit. It's amazing. But it's a really apt quotation at the end of this presentation, because truly, if you are who you should be, meaning God has given you gifts, talents, and if you serve with those as magnanimous people, you will set the world ablaze. You will set the world ablaze. So cultivate this virtue in your life. Contemplate on it. Dream. But also, don't let it be dreams. Act. Step out. Do things. Take risks. I told you with this picture, I showed you this picture at the start, and I said, like, here were these people 19 years ago who were on this project, and I gave you a couple of the biographies of some of them now. You know, what they're doing and the steps that they've taken to be magnanimous. Right? So in 19 years from now, when the next World Youth Day comes, what will we say about this photo?
Oh, that's so cute.
It's us.
Whoa.
Look at that blue
theme
you
got. Guys.
Oh. There is so much swag in that photo.
That's so a really clear picture. Whose picture is that? Your phone?
You said like yesterday?
That's my phone.
Yes.
Nailed it.
I mean,
you straight up just look too cool for us.
I'm like, why is no one else wearing sunglasses?
Color scheme on point.
Yeah, it's like
so.
It's like everyone's favorite color is blue or something.
And all the girls wearing like white and blue.
Yeah.
Good thing I'm saying in the back.
So weird.
It wasn't even
So besides checking out everybody and how, you know, good looking they are, et cetera, you guys are made for greatness. And my prayer in 20 years, 19 years from now, is that the mission leaders and the people who will be giving those opening welcoming talks will be able to show this photo and say, here's what she did. Here's what he did. Here's how God used them to do great things. Mm-hmm.